continue this story. Scott and I, during the all of the breaks, have been talking about the incident with Tony Stewart and a young man named Ward, 20-year-old sprint car driver. During, as I say, during all of the long breaks, and we might as well jump into it. Let me tell you what occurred, and we can discuss what are the ramifications. Tony Stewart is among the most famous NASCAR drivers. He was a kart driver, an Indy car driver, prior to coming to NASCAR, and with considerable success. He is a very good NASCAR driver. I'm a casual fan of NASCAR, not an avid fan, but a casual fan. I actually like Tony Stewart, and I disagree with almost everything Tony Stewart says, and I recognize that he's a hothead, but he's entertaining. Tony Stewart, as he likes to do for a hobby, was racing sprint cars on a dirt track about 50 miles away from the NASCAR race that was scheduled to take place on Sunday. That race is taking place.
Which he does often.
Which he does often.
Yep.
He does often. In fact, he missed half of the season last year because he was badly injured in a sprint car race. And about a year or so ago, he badly injured a young woman and a wreck that he caused in sprint cars. So there is a video that shows Tony Stewart racing his sprint car in this kind of really tiny track in New York. And Tony Stewart clearly, on the video that we have, runs this Ward, a 20-year-old who's been racing sprint cars with considerable success for the past 4 years, runs him into the wall, clips him, pushes him into the wall. The car twists and turns and brings out a caution. And Tony Stewart's clearly responsible for running the kid into the wall, taking him out of the race, wrecking his car. Tony Stewart has a long history. I mean, this is a guy whose personality and attitude are well known. Anytime that he's taken out of a race, even if he is to blame, he always blames the other guy. I mean, that's his reputation. Tony Stewart is never wrong. The other guy is always wrong. And he's a hothead. And Tony Stewart very typically will get out of his car if he thinks that when he always does, the other guy has wronged him and wrecked his car. And he'll take off his helmet. He'll walk towards the offending driver, and he'll throw his helmet at that car.
Usually so this kid, outside window.
Right. So this kid gets out of his car, and he is doing exactly what Tony Stewart would typically do. He is walking down the track to confront Stewart the next time that he comes around. Now, as would be the case in NASCAR, there's a yellow, a caution, which means, in fact, you can hear all of these cars revved as they make the turn, and Tony Stewart's car pushes Ward's car into the wall, wrecking him. And then you can see that the caution comes out, and all of the cars go to idle. So all of the engines go from a roar down to just an idle. And they're kind of going around the track, and the kid gets out of his car, 20-year-old kid, and he does the Tony Stewart, walks down his car because he wants to confront Tony Stewart for wrecking him. And as the first car approaches the kid walking down the track, it simply turns down the track to avoid him. Tony Stewart doesn't. He actually accelerates his car. And you can hear Tony, during the caution, all these cars are idling, and all of a sudden, Tony Stewart, you hear him rev his car. When you rev a sprint car, the rear end always swings out to the right. Tony would have known that. The rear end swung out to the right.
To the outside of the track.
Outside of the track. Ran over the kid, dragged him a number of feet, and then shot him some 50 feet backwards as Stewart continued to rev that engine. Kid was killed. So, what now? Now, Tony Stewart said that night that he was going to race in the road course race, I guess it's Watkins Glen.
Yep, Watkins Glen.
And then it's obvious that Zeffirelli, who's his competition chairman at his director at Stuart Haas Racing, said, you know, Tony, I think you need to sleep on this. And the next morning, it's pretty apparent that Zeffirelli got to Tony and said, man, you killed a kid. I understand you didn't intend to kill him, but you killed a kid. You can't race today. And so while Tony Stewart did not face the media, Zeffirelli did and said, you know, tragic and whatnot. Now, so far there's been no charges that have been filed, but we've spent a lot of time, Scott, talking about the entitled attitude and whether it be sexual abuse or physical abuse that is a result of athletes who are held to a different standard. Now, Tony Stewart's gotten by with very bad behavior for a very long time.
Yep.
Now, I understand, apart from the track, he's a nice guy.
Yes.
But his on-track persona is horrid, and it got to him, and the kid's dead today.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a horrible situation, and I... He was on the outside, and he couldn't go down on the track because there was cars there. It's not like he went, you know, I don't know why he was up on that outside. I didn't see the whole, in the video, I don't see, you know, if he just never had the chance.
Yeah, Tony Stewart ran up on him, you know, Tony Stewart ran up on him, pinched him into the wall. I mean, it's I don't think there's anybody that's doubting the fact that in a racing accident, Tony Stewart pushed the kid into the wall. Now, was Tony Stewart trying to push the kid into the wall?
I'm talking about when, not the accident part. That was definitely Tony Stewart's fault.
Yeah, that's Tony Stewart's fault.
Because he just came up into the kid. In the accident part, in the car.
Yeah, when he hit the kid, okay.
But when he hit the kid, there was cars below him, so he couldn't get back down. So he only had one way there's only one way his car can go. So he had to go near the kid. The kid was well down on the track.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing a car below Tony, because you've got the view of it doesn't look like there's a car below him. But anyway, okay. They're in caution, so they're going quite slow. They're on idle.
And we spoke about in the break. I don't know why the kid's down so far. I don't know why Tony Stewart revs his engine.
But he does.
But he does. And
what happens with a sprint car when you rev the engine?
Well, you start to drift high.
Right.
So you drift into the outside of the track.
Right.
It's the same thing that happens, you know, when you're in your car and you're going on an on-ramp or something and you take the turn, you'll feel your car pull to the high side of the,
right.
You know.
That's why you accelerate out of a turn and not into the turn.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. And Tony Stewart accelerated the car in the middle of a caution period, and it pushed the car towards the kid and ran him over.
I can't say anything to defend Tony Stewart. Because I think the action is indefensible.
Yeah, he's an expert in driving sprint cars. He knows exactly what's going to happen when he accelerates that car.
He is truly one of the most talented drivers in NASCAR. There's not a single type of car that he has not raced.
He can't drive. That's right.
Because he's been in Formula One. He's been in IndyCar.
He's not an amateur.
He's not an amateur. And the guy,
he knows what that car is going to do. And he's good at controlling that car. No one's better at controlling the car.
So I can't say. I want to try and defend Tony Stewart. I do. My uncle is friends with him. He knows him. My uncle used to work with NASCAR, and he knows him. And he says he's a great guy. And I want to. Being that he's a friend of my uncle's, I want to try and defend.
But what did Tony Stewart uncle also say about him? About this accident?
There's no way Tony doesn't know how that car is going to respond.
When he accelerates it.
He says that there's times where things are broken on a car, and Tony just knows by, you know, he can radio into his pit crew that, you know, such and such doesn't feel right. I think this broke.
Right.
So he knows everything about that car. And like I said, I can't defend him. I can't defend what he did.
He knew what the car was going to do, and he accelerated. Now, there is no chance in the world that Tony Stewart wanted to kill the kid. that he wanted to run over the kid, that he was trying to injure the kid. But it's obvious that Tony Stewart was PO'd, that the kid was outing him. I mean, Tony Stewart caused the accident, and Tony Stewart didn't like the fact that this kid was doing a Tony Stewart, which is to walk down the track to hold Tony Stewart accountable in front of the fans that were there. Tony Stewart didn't like that. And Tony Stewart accelerated the car, probably just as his way of saying, you know, go away. I don't appreciate this.
I see you. You know, this is,
I see you, and here's my retort to you is I'm going to accelerate the car. It's going to kick up some dirt. It's going to move the car into you to brush you back. So,
which would be, if the guy's yelling at him, he could rev the engine. You'd never hear what the guy says.
Right.
You know, so it could just be his way of saying, I don't care what you have to say.
I don't care what you have to say.
I don't want to hear what you have to say.
It was a deliberate act by Tony to nullify the this kid, embarrassing him. And it killed him. Now, that's reckless endangerment. It's reckless homicide. Tony Stewart didn't want to kill him, didn't want to injure him. But Tony Stewart's actions as an expert manipulator of that car, under those circumstances, he let his ego get to him, and he made a mistake that cost this kid his life. Now, under that circumstances.
Which was a string of multiple mistakes. I mean, Tony drives the kid into the wall. Kid gets out of the car, decides that, I'm gonna
play a Tony Stewart. I'm gonna walk down the track at him during the caution.
Don't think that his ego doesn't play into him. I'm gonna go down there and I'm gonna show Tony.
He did exactly what Tony Stewart would have done. He was like a clone of Tony Stewart.
Yep. So
shouldn't have done that. We would say Tony Stewart shouldn't do it. This kid shouldn't have done it.
No, exactly. He shouldn't have been down there. And
right.
I mean, even Tony Stewart, he never gets that close to the cars. He gets close enough so he can throw his helmet.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to throw my helmet and hit your car. Yeah.
Right.
Although
Tony Stewart has run his car into other cars at cautions, too. Yeah, Tony Stewart's a hothead.
Yep.
You can't separate Tony Stewart's persona and hostile attitude.
When he's on the racetrack.
And tendency to shut other people down when he's around a race car. That persona played into this accident. It contributed to the death of this young man. So, bottom line here is, we'll talk about this some more in a moment, I don't think Tony Stewart should ever race again. Into the last segment by saying that I don't think Tony Stewart should ever race again, based upon how he allowed his antagonism towards other drivers to get the best of him and made a very bad call. Not intentionally trying to kill the kid, but to scare the kid and to drown out his voice, and it led to his death. Tony Stewart should never race a car again. Now, there's lots of reasons for that. One is that Haas Automation, that makes the CNC machines, that provides the money for that team, is a really class act. That's a extraordinarily moral company, moral founders, good guys. And they may love Tony Stewart as a person and may appreciate the quality of race team that he's built with them. But they can't take that stain on their product line. And the NASCAR is all about advertisements. I mean, those cars are rolling billboards. Whether it's Office Depot, whoever the brand is, they can't have Tony Stewart paying Tony Stewart to be associated with him. And so he needs just to hang it up. He can continue to own the race team and be involved in the background, but the days of Tony Stewart as a driver should be over. And if I were Tony Stewart, I'd come out and I'd just say, listen, I accelerated, yes. I was just trying to get out of the way. I saw the kid coming down. I thought that the safest move was to accelerate the car so that it moved on down the track and would get out of the way before he would make it all the way down. So I was trying to avoid contact. Now, should I have known that by accelerating that the rear end of that car would have spun out? I should have. I just wasn't thinking. And this was the consequence. But I think he needs to own it. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah. I think that's the... I think that's the most appropriate stance to take. As you said, Haas, you know, they might like working with Tony Stewart and all that, but he can't be in the car.
And part of that is because of, you know, if this was an isolated incident, that'd be one thing. But this isn't. This is Tony Stewart's persona.
True, yeah, but live by the sword, die by the sword.
I mean, what's Tony Stewart's nickname?
Smoke.
Right, and was it chosen? Is it Smoke because he's obscure, or is it Smoke because he's a hothead? Smoke and hot.
It's because he's a hothead.
Right. What is Tony Stewart? When everybody has their names on the sides of their race cars, what does Tony Stewart have as his on the side of the doorway of his car? Is that his name?
I think it's his nickname.
Smoke?
Yeah, I think it's his nickname.
He's a hothead. You used an example in during one of the commercial breaks. You said if a mixed martial art, one of these, what do they call the fight series now that's so popular?
MMA, UFC.
MMA, okay.
Mixed martial arts.
Okay, too. All right. But if an MMA, mixed martial arts fighter, whose hands and feet are deadly. Unless, you know, if you're confronting somebody who is not similarly trained, your hands and feet are deadly. Let's say that he goes into a bar, and this was your example, and he picks a fight with somebody. You know, he starts mocking somebody in front of his girlfriend, and he picks a fight, like Tony Stewart picking the fight by wrecking the kid's car, and then the kid stupidly chooses to stand up. You know, he's got his girlfriend there, and he chooses to stand up to the bully and comes at him. Now the kid's making a stupid move, but if the mixed martial art guy then uses the weapons that he has and he kills that kid, he ought not fight again.
Yeah, well, you'd call that murder.
I would call it murder, but I would certainly, because it's not the intent. But you know, murder is premeditated. I would not even infer for a moment that Tony Stewart was trying to kill that kid. He wasn't even trying to injure the kid.
No, but I think that if you're, I think if you're a fighter and you know what kind of damage you can do. And depending on how it goes, if he just, you know, punches the guy a couple times and then the guy, you know, something tragic happens to where the guy happens to die, you know, that's one thing, but...
Reckless homicide.
Yep. But
scary.
I mean, if all of a sudden, you know, the story is that he kicked the guy in the head, that's a lot different. I mean, that's a lot different to me. You can't say you're kicking somebody in the face to defend yourself.
Correct. You don't accelerate a race car to defend yourself either. CBS News has just posted the following article on this very story that we're covering. It begins by saying, there has never been another incident in race car driving quite like this one on Saturday night in Canandaigua in upstate New York. An angry young driver named Kevin Ward got out of his car after a dust-up with NASCAR veteran Tony Stewart and walked into the middle of the dark, muddy track in a black fire suit, angrily gesturing. Now, there wasn't a dust-up. Tony Stewart ran into the kid and caused the kids to crash hard into the wall. Those are the facts. So we might as well begin with an accurate recording of what occurred. The fact that the kids... outfit was dark, which a lot of people are saying, well, maybe he couldn't be seen. No. Tony Stewart accelerated in the kid's presence. The car in front swerved out of the way and missed him. Tony Stewart absolutely knew the kid was there. There's no issue here with lack of visibility. Those tracks are always damp. They're not muddy. They're just damp. That's just the way that the dirt tracks are prepared. And he wasn't just angrily gesturing. The odds are that he was screaming obscenities at Tony Stewart. So Tony Stewart passed by with his rear wheel clipped Ward, who was later pronounced dead. His rear wheel didn't clip him. Ran over him. It dragged him down the track, and then continuing to accelerate, it tossed him, his whole body, like 50 feet further down the track. Quote, at this very moment, there are no facts in hand that would substantiate or support criminal charges or indicate criminal intent on part of any individual, said Ontario County Sheriff Philip Provero on Sunday. I'm surprised that he went that far. Now, we've all agreed, at least Scott and I, by all of us, that there was no criminal intent. Tony Stewart did not intend to run the kid over. But Tony Stewart definitely accelerated his car during a caution. And that acceleration of his car during the caution has to be considered. Why did he do it? That's what caused the kid to die, is Tony Stewart accelerating his car during a caution with that kid coming down towards the car. Tony Stewart doesn't accelerate that car, the kid doesn't die. Officials have interviewed Stewart twice since Ward died and said simply the driver was visibly shaken. Yeah, should be. Killed a kid. His actions led to a kid dying. Despite all of that, Stewart may not be out of the legal woods yet, CBS News legal analyst Jack Ford told CBS this morning. They're going to look at all the possibilities here, Ford said. There could be some type of charges out of here that don't focus on intent. That's exactly what we talked about during the last segment. In other words, Stewart might not have meant it, but there's still the possibility of charges like criminally negligent homicide. If prosecutors can prove that Stewart was ignoring the obvious risk. And Stewart can't say that he did not know that he accelerated. Stewart can't say that he didn't intentionally accelerate. And Stewart can't say that he didn't know that if he accelerated, that car would move up the track towards the young man. And that's what killed him. So, no, Tony Stewart didn't intend to kill him. But there is absolutely no way to demonstrate that Tony Stewart wasn't ignoring obvious risk that whereby he was criminally negligent in the homicide of this young man. This also says, additionally, Stewart's notorious past could play a role. CBS News correspondent Don Dollar reports that Stewart got into a helmet-throwing incident 2 years ago and made a statement that could play a role here. This is Stewart's quote. I checked up twice not to run him over. I learned my lesson there. I'm going to run over him every chance I get until the end of the year. Every chance I've got, I'm going to run over him. There's a fellow named Daniel Weinstein said, if I'm a prosecutor, this person is a federal prosecutor in Miami who is now in private practice. He says, I think it would be difficult to prove criminal intent, but we're not talking about intent here. He says, I think even with the video, it's going to be tough to prove that there was more than just an accident and that it was even culpable negligence, which he should have known or shouldn't have believed that by getting close to this guy that it was going to cause the accident. He accelerated his car during a caution, which 100% of the time will cause that car to run up the track towards this young man. Obviously, the person speaking doesn't have the facts. He's making a statement without evidence. This is a serious scenario as it relates to what do our sports heroes and our sports stars, what are they allowed to get by with? I mean, I can tell you that because I'm blunt, confrontational, that if I went into a church, say, and I was this blunt and confrontational and aggressive inside of a church, and I antagonized people to the point that they came at me, and they physically began to assault me, and I pulled a knife that I had taken with me, knowing that I was going to incite them to anger, and I kill somebody with that knife, I'm not going to be able to say it was in self-defense, even though they were coming after me and I didn't throw a blow. And I'd be done. Now, I'm not going to do any of those things. Never carried a knife, discourage violence, and I never go into a place and confront others. This is a forum for those who wish to listen to an expose as to why they should not trust their military, shouldn't trust their government, shouldn't trust their religion, to freely assemble if you want to listen. I'm not going into your house, though, telling you it could be a waste of my time and it would just create enemies. I'm not going to go into the U.S. Congress stating this. I'm not going to go into a church stating this. If you want to listen, you want to deal with reality, you're welcome to. But Tony Stewart knows that he's had all sorts of problems on a racetrack, that he's a hothead. And it was his poor judgment at that moment when it should have mattered that somebody acting like him was killed by him. So how are we going to handle it? Scott, any more thoughts before we move back to the news? Other news?
Not really.
You like I wish really it hadn't happened because we happen to be Tony Stewart fans. We're race car fans.
I don't have any other thoughts.
Yes.
I can't come up with a way. The situation is not all right. Obviously, he was wrong. Everything about this situation is wrong. One, the kid shouldn't have gotten out of his car. In fact, it's against the rules unless your car is on fire to leave your car when it's on the track. You have to wait until the security team stays there.
But who is the most notorious race car driver in the world for getting out of their car to display anger at another driver?
That's fine. I understand that. I'm not. What somebody else does. Because Tony Stewart does this doesn't mean that you can do this, that you should do this.
No.
The rules are there because...
Kid put himself in harm's way, there's no question about it.
Yep, and why Tony Stewart revs his engine, I have no clue. I have no idea whether it's so that way he doesn't have to hear the kid talking or what. But there's so many things that I have an issue with on this. And,
but it is unquestionably Tony Stewart revving that engine that caused the kid to die.
Yeah, because that's what made the car turn. And
move up the track.
He does get hit with the rear end of the car. And
he's not getting hit with a car that is at idle, just idling around the track. He got hit by a car that was accelerating, and that drug him underneath it and shot him 50 feet out the back.
And he doesn't get, obviously Tony Stewart's not intentionally running over because he doesn't get run over by the front, the front end of the car. But he does run the kid over, and that led to the kid's death. And,
it's got to be a consequence.
There has to be a consequence,
and there needs to be a connection with prior behavior.
Not only does there have to be a consequence, but there's got to be some form of him taking a form of responsibility, which is why I said that him, leaving racing, not
right.
just retiring as a driver.
Right.
Like that's him accepting a consequence. That's him imposing something on himself because of something that he did.
Yeah, and, but it's also setting a proper example, and, which at this point now, he's taken a life. And so at this point, you would think if you're going to be a good moral person, you've got to say, you know, it's important to recognize myself and Mr. Ward, young Ward, and that you know, my kind of reaction, and now I want to set a different example, not the hothead example, but the mature example that says there has to be a consequence for these kinds of things, and yeah. The consequence is I'm never going to get behind the wheel of a race car.
I'm not going to drive again, and you know it's not for sponsors. Because I guarantee you, he'll go without a sponsor for a year, 2 years.
No, but eventually somebody's going to. No, I can't. Not in that sport.
I'm saying that he would find people that would be willing to put money and back him. And,
you know, Home Depot essentially put him on timeout because of his hot-headed behavior, which is why he ended up starting his own team, is that. He was put on a temper tantrum timeout by Home Depot. Yeah. Quality brands don't want to be associated with this. Now, are there smaller brands? Yes. But you know, Haas Automation is a quality company. There has to be a consequence. Returning to the article in the last segment of this program, and we'll turn to Paul's stupidity in the letter to the Romans right after the news. This journalist says that that America's unwillingness to give weapons to moderate fighters. Now, recognizing there's only two meaningful groups in the Syrian conflict, al-Nusra, which have come out and said, we are fundamentalist Muslims. We're in this to establish an Islamic caliphate. They said they rejected even attending the Free Syrian, you know, army conferences where there was going to be a government established and the protocols and a ways of funneling the American weapons down to the fighters. They said, no, we don't want to attend that. Those people have, first of all, they're all expatriates. They're all outside the country. They're not engaged in this battle. They have no presence in Iraq. But beyond all that, their goals, their ambitions are not similar to ours at all. And al-Nusra came out and said, we are fighting to establish Sharia law and an Islamic caliphate. Period. End of conversation. That's what we're about. How does that differ from the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria? Not at all. Now, for a while, the two battled each other, both battling each other with American weapons funneled through Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And for a while, it looked like the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria was taking it on the chin. But no. Ultimately, there was a union of the two. They stopped fighting each other. And collectively, they used their weapons that America had supplied and took them across the border into Iraq, because that was the advancement of their own goal. But anyway, this article says, so that made it easier for ISIS to overpower the underfunded moderate rebels, of which there never has been and never will be in Islam. And now ISIS has seized in Iraq much better versions of the weapons that we were so worried they might acquire in Syria. So now we're bombing the guns that we didn't mean to give to ISIS because we didn't give guns to their enemies because then ISIS might have the guns. It's not just ironic. It's a symbol of how disastrous the past 15 years of U.S.-Iraq policy have been, how circuitous and self-perpetuating the violence, that we are now bombing our own guns. Welcome to American grand strategy in the Middle East. No. Welcome to the grand strategy of America and the world. We are the weapons supplier of the world. That's just who we are. We start wars. We started the first Afghanistan war, the second Afghanistan war, the first Iraqi war, the second Iraqi war. We are the big bad boy on the block. We're not only the primary weapons supplier in the world, we have the largest military in the world, larger than the rest of the world combined. Our great strategy is to create conflict and then arm both sides in the conflict and then try to dictate the outcome of those conflicts. And by so doing, we're making a mess of the world. That's why Yahweh specifically condemned America relative to greater Syria and Iraq in Yeshaya 17 and 18, Isaiah 17 and 18. The Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, ISIS, why don't you call it the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria if you're going to use ISIS, used to have a different name, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. No, they didn't. They were not Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They were the Islamic State in Iraq. That was their name. That was their only name. They were called Al-Qaeda in Iraq by the United States as a justification for the United States war. They never had an affiliation with Al-Qaeda, and they never used that term. They used the name the Islamic State of Iraq. And they became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria when they invaded Syria, and then they just became the Islamic State when they parceled out so much territory. U.S. hopes and allied Sunni militias defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq during the post 2006 surge, but it did not destroy them. That is another myth that's promoted by the U.S. military. The Sunni militias did not defeat Al-Qaeda. They didn't even fight Al-Qaeda. The Sunni militias, which are now the basis of the Islamic State, the reason the Islamic State has been so successful, they have unified with the Awakening Councils, with the Sunni militias that America armed during the Awakening program. Those militias are now partners with the Islamic State. They never fought them. And this myth that that was part of the surge and was successful was Petraeus' delusion that at the time I condemned. And now this is the consequence of it. We'll return to this story tomorrow.